Have we seen the last of the 80s? It sounds like the 90s are here to stay, and you know what that means. What's right around the corner, that century mark will not be too far off in the future. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. Along with Ed Alexander, Ed and I welcome you to the Buckmaster Show. It is our midweek edition for this Wednesday, April the 29th, 2015. Hope you're having a good week so far. We're coming to you live from Tucson's AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice, with live streaming at buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com, so you can hear the program anywhere. Podcasts and our complete show archive available 24/7 on my website, buckmastershow.com. We usually have our shows into the podcasts about an hour or so after their conclusion each afternoon. We have links to our show on the home pages of the TucsonSentinel.com, Inside Tucson Business, the Green Valley News, and Sarita Sun, and our newest media partner, TucsonLifestyle.com. We'll begin with our monthly conversation on health with Dr. Victoria Mazes. Then at the bottom of the hour, going to be a fun half hour from 12:30 to 1. Not that the interview with Dr. Mazes won't be fun, but this will be a little bit different at 12:30, about speaking with the author of a new book about how Westerns mirror our American culture. So we invite you at any time during the hour to call us on the live line, 790-2040, and our Facebook page is Bill Buckmaster. You can also send me an email at bill@buckmastershow.com, and I'll try to get your question on the air. The Buckmaster Show contributor on health is Dr. Victoria Mazes. Dr. Mazes is the executive director of the University of Arizona Center for Integrative Medicine. She is a professor of medicine, family medicine, and public health. She is an internationally recognized leader in the integrative medicine field, and she is committed to health promotion and pioneering change efforts that solve America's healthcare system problems. She's the editor of the Oxford University textbook, Women's Integrative Health, and the author of Be Fruitful, The Essential Guide to Maximizing Fertility and Giving Birth to a Healthy Child. You can learn more about her at her website, Victoria Mazes, that's MAIZESMD.com, or follow her on Twitter at VMazes. Dr. Mazes, how are you today?
I'm doing well, and I do hope this will be a fun half hour, because we're going to talk about activity, which should be fun.
It will be a fun half hour, and a half hour that I am looking forward to, because let's face it, Victoria, Dr. Mazes, experts in your field, the health field, have been debating how much exercise is too little, how much or what is just right to improve health and longevity.
Yeah, well, actually, there was a study that was just released from JAMA, one of the leading medical journals, about 2 weeks ago, and it looked at 661,000 middle-aged adults and looked at their exercise habits to try to answer that very question, what is the right amount? And then they looked at death records for these folks, 14 years worth of death records, and they found that people who didn't exercise at all were at the highest risk of early death. But even exercising a little bit, you know, not meeting the recommendation of 30 minutes on most days or 150 minutes a week, they reduced their risk by about 20%. If you got to that 150 minutes a week of moderate exercise, they reduced their risk of dying prematurely by 31%. And if you were a real, like, avid exerciser, about an hour a day, they reduce their risk by 39%. So, you know, if you want to live a long life, and I would say a long, healthy life, being physically active, exercising is definitely one of the things you want to be doing.
So no one doubts that any amount of exercise then is better than none. And I think sometimes people, when the healthcare professionals tell you you need to exercise this amount of minutes, it's a turnoff for some people because they're very busy, most of them, they're saying, I just don't know if I can work that in.
Absolutely. So, you know, then you get to, well, you know, what's the smallest amount that's beneficial?
Exactly.
Or how do we incorporate it into our days? So one interesting evolution is the invention of the tread desk. And I actually have a tread desk.
What?
And so I can walk while I am speaking to you, and I'm doing so right now on this radio interview. I am also walking. I'm walking at a very slow pace so that you wouldn't find me short of breath, 1.5 miles per hour. So that's a very leisurely pace to be walking at, but it allows me to get exercise during the course of my workday.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's called
a tread desk.
A tread
and
desk.
And so it's a standing desk, obviously, but they also have ones that could be used, for example, if you were biking while you were walking. And the idea is that you walk quite slowly, but you are both standing, and there's, you know, some evidence coming out that being sedentary, seated all the time, is not good for our health. And so standing is a better choice, and then slowly walking at a pace that you can still read, you know, work on your computer, talk to someone on the phone without sounding like you're huffing and puffing.
Well, our friend Ed, who's engineering and producing the show, just brought up on my screen here in the announcer's booth something called a tread desk treadmill. It's really cool. It's got a place for, you know, your computer, a little desk right in front of you.
That's exactly what I'm using. Yes. So that's one way to fit it in, as an example. Another way would be to take a walk at lunch. There's actually research that shows that when people take a walk at lunch, when they actually leave and take a break, they are more productive and more creative in the afternoon when they return from work. So one of the things people worry about is the cost to them of the time out of their day. But if it actually makes you more productive, then it may be time that's overall very efficient and very well spent. And then the last thing I'd say is that there is actually a series of studies that look at people exercising outside. This is sometimes called green exercise. There was one study from Japan where they called it forest bathing. I love that. Forest bathing. And it turns out that when you're outside in nature, for as little as 5 minutes, and everybody has 5 minutes, but with as little as 5 minutes, it showed improved mood and improved self-esteem. So there's just so many benefits from finding some time to exercise.
Well, you know, there's that old adage, you go to the doctor and the doctor says, take 2 aspirin and call me in the morning. Well, now there are actually some physicians, I think in the San Francisco area, that are prescribing some time in the park to the patients.
Yes, so this is a really wonderful program. It's actually a national program, although there was recently an article written about what's happening in San Francisco. But it's a national program that has been developed by the Institute at the Golden Gate, and I actually had the privilege of going to a few of these early meetings, and it's a partnership with the national parks and the national forest, and the idea is to get people out and moving. But, you know, it's wonderful if you have a spectacular national park, but if it's not nearby, it may not be that feasible. Not everybody has a car. You know, not everyone has an easy way of getting to parks. So in this particular project, the folks who are organizing it are really looking at, well, what would be very close to someone's house? We have so many urban parks. For example, I don't know if you've ever had the opportunity to walk around Reed Park, but there are just so many people who are there walking the perimeter, and that's a wonderful way to get exercise. So in this example, they have trained health professionals to write a prescription, a PARC prescription, and it could say something like, you know, the recommendation is exercising at Sabino Canyon, mm-hmm. and the dose could be 45 minutes of walking or running, and the directions could be Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 7 in the morning with an unlimited amount of refills.
So, up in San Francisco, they were saying that nearly 98% of the Bay Area residents in the city by the bay do live within a 10-minute walk of a park. But, you know, I think you could probably say, even here in Tucson, that you're probably within, I don't know, 15 minutes of a park somewhere, wouldn't you say?
Well, I think it would be great if we had that mapped out in our city. And I know that right now there is a bond to look at open land open spaces. And, you know, we all benefit from having some of these wonderful open spaces that we can take these walks and exercise, you know, in nature and have all of the benefits from exercising outdoors. It actually isn't just, you know, mood and self-esteem, although obviously those are wonderful. It actually also enhances creativity. It helps give us a better sense of energy, and it is revitalizing to us.
And it can also help in reducing your weight. Maybe not as much as some people think, because that a lot of that has to do with what you eat and your calories.
Well, there's no question that being physically active is part an important part of maintaining our weight. There's actually a really wonderful project that's going on in Scotland that I recently heard presented. It's called the Daily Mile. And this was actually introduced with children where they noticed that the children were gaining weight and having issues with obesity. And the parents basically said they knew that they should have their kids exercising, but they didn't necessarily have the time. And so the head teacher, a woman named Elaine Wiley, instituted this Daily Mile. And essentially, the teachers in the classroom decide when's a good time for a break, and the kids go out and walk a mile. And this is Scotland. They walk in all weathers, unless it's really raining very heavily or icy. And the kids apparently have become more fit, and they also have much better concentration in their classrooms. And it's now been extended to other schools in Scotland.
All right, Dr. Victoria Mays, is always a wealth of information. Keep up your walking at 1.5 miles per hour on your treadmill as we take a break, our first break here on the Midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. We encourage folks to call in 790-2040. We'll talk more about exercise and good health with Dr. Mays right after this.
Do bees worry you? Do bees scare you? Would you like to know a pest control company who can give you options in dealing with this situation? How about bee removal? Or would you prefer to send them straight to bee heaven? Five Star Termite and Pest Control can give you these options. Call the professionals at Five Star, 886-0045, fivestar-termite.com.
Five Star Pest Control, and we know what bugs you.
American Openings is pleased to be a sponsor of Good News Radio Broadcasting, featuring local news and information on AM 1030 KVOI. The good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ on KGMS 940 AM. Positive and encouraging music on 88.1 FM K-Love. And pop classics on KCEE 690 AM. American Openings is a locally owned door and window manufacturer, concerned about our community and proud to be a partner with Good News Radio to help make our community a better place.
The Regional Transportation Authority has completed more than 570 projects to date. Our projects range from new roadway lanes to new transit services, plus new sidewalks and bike lanes. The Regional Transportation Authority also funds crosswalks for added pedestrian safety and new signal technology to keep people and goods moving. We're improving safety and regional mobility for you. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
Hey, honey. Welcome home. How was your trip to L.A.?
Flying out of Tucson was the way to go. I got 3 whole days of FaceTime with the board, and they liked the fact that I saved the company time and money by flying out of TIA.
Oh, honey, that's great. Sounds like your career is really taking off.
You bet. With so many daily flights to L.A., I can get there in no time at all.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word compare to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Vero Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Vero Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Vero Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with 2 separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition at 12:21 on this Wednesday afternoon. Once a month, we are honored to have Dr. Victoria Mays is the Executive Director of the University of Arizona Center for Integrative Medicine and a Professor of Medicine, Family Medicine, and Public Health. And right now, Dr. Mays she has a little headset on right now so she can hear us, and she is walking in her office on her little treadmill. And her desk is in front of her, and she is getting a little exercise, correct, Dr. Mazes?
Yes, so it's this very gradual pace so that you can do your work. You can read on a computer, you can type, you can speak on the phone while you're going through your workday. And in a day where I am at the office all day, I might maybe walk about 2 miles. I'm sometimes seated. I have a table in my office as well. But it is quite wonderful to not be sitting all day.
We have been talking in the first segment about the right dose of exercise for a longer life. Scientists all have not known whether there is a safe upper limit on exercise. Are we getting a better handle on that?
I think there's still so much question about that. And, you know, even the right amount of exercise is going to vary from person to person, depending a little bit on their goal. So is your goal a long life? Is your goal weight loss? Is your goal to just meet the minimal cardiovascular fitness recommendations? Those are all going to be different. Do you have arthritis, for example? People with arthritis are going to have a hard time running for sure, perhaps walking. They may find exercising in water, which really supports the joints, or exercising by using a recumbent bike, which is not going to put so much weight on the knee joints, for example, to be a much better choice. So finding the thing that is right for your body, and most especially that you'll enjoy, because we are more likely to continue things that we enjoy than things that are drudgery for us.
It's interesting. You must have read my mind. We must be on the same wavelength here. And I was going.
Are you walking as well?
Maybe, yeah. You brought up arthritis, and there have been numerous studies about osteoarthritis in the knee, which is which is one of the most common complaints that folks, certainly over 50, have. They have, the joints, they have little pains in the knee. And the studies have shown that surgery, the scoping, so-called scoping, really is not, or maybe that exercise is equally effective in correcting some of those problems.
Well, again, some of that is going to depend on the individual and exactly what the particularities are of their osteoarthritis, how bad it is, what the findings are. But I think that some people don't exercise when they have arthritis, and yet, the question is, what can you do? If you can't do something that you used to do, play golf or work in the garden, can you walk at a gentle pace? Can you swim? Can you walk in water? Anything that has you up and moving is going to be better than being sedentary. And so finding the things that you actually can physically do, and usually as we do them, we actually are more able over time.
So walking in place in the swimming pool can be a good little workout for someone with arthritis, correct?
Absolutely. The water helps support the joints. It is you're exercising against less weight. The warm water in particular can be really soothing to the joints as well. So definitely something to be considered. And our Y's, for example, have programs where people can exercise in the water.
Getting back to those original studies we were talking about, there have been a couple of, you mentioned that large-scale study. What, again, Dr. Mazes, was considered a minimum amount a day? Did you say?
Yes. Common recommendation is 150 minutes a week, and that would be about 30 minutes 5 days a week.
Okay.
I usually tell people that they should only exercise on the days that they eat.
well, that'd be every day, of course, yes.
Unless you're fasting. And then, we all are human, and so there may be, a day that we miss. But we really do want to be physically active on most days. A lot of people are now using pedometers to measure steps. 10,000 steps is usually what's recommended for physical activity across the day. That's going to measure all your steps, walking to the car, walking into your office, or deliberately going for a walk at lunchtime. Other people are using Fitbits and other kinds of electronic tools to measure their physical activity. A lot of people really love this. It gives them feedback about how they're doing over the course of the day.
In your book, Be Fruitful, The Essential Guide to Maximizing Fertility and Giving Birth to a Healthy Child, do you address this issue of exercise, and can exercise help to improve the chances of the fertility?
It's a great question. So exercise actually has a bit of a complicated relationship with fertility. In general, in my medical practice, I'm always encouraging people to exercise more. But when I'm counseling a woman who is trying to conceive, sometimes I find myself recommending that she exercise less. And that's because we know that when women exercise in really serious ways, the professional gymnasts or ballet dancers or people who are training for marathons, sometimes they actually shut down their menstrual cycles and they have amenorrhea. And if you completely shut down your cycle, then you're not going to ovulate and you're not going to be able to conceive. And so that is actually one time when less may be more, when backing off of vigorous exercise to more gentle forms, walking instead of running, doing a gentle yoga class instead of a Bikram or a hot room yoga class could be a much better choice. The exception is women who are overweight. They benefit from continuing to vigorously exercise.
The Center for Integrative Medicine will be having a clinic eventually here that will be open to all in Southern Arizona. Do you have an update on that, Dr. Mazes?
Well, as your listeners may know, we are in a transition with Banner University Medical mm-hmm. Group coming in, and so we are working out the details with Banner. Banner is excited about an integrative clinic, and so I hope to have news for your listeners soon.
Yeah, and that Banner transition, I believe, happened in March. And as you say, I think they're very committed to the program that you and Dr. Weil have at the university. I'm sure they've indicated that to you.
Yes, they're very aligned with the principles of integrative medicine and with health promotion and with being active in the community. So we're excited about this new partnership.
Okay, Dr. Victoria Mazes, thank you very much. Folks can find you at your website, victoriamazesmd.com, or you can follow Victoria on Twitter at vmazes, M-A-I-Z-E-S. And your book that we mentioned, Be Fruitful, is available probably at all the Amazon and other fine bookstores, as they say.
It's a pleasure to speak with you today, Bill.
Thanks a lot. Dr. Mazes is with us. We're always honored to have her with us on the Buckmaster Show once a month. Coming up now on 12:30, we will be talking about the Western movies. Do you have a favorite Western movie? I'd like to hear from you, and so would Dr. Richard Aguila, who's written a book called The Sagebrush Trail, and call us at 790-2040. We're going to talk about the movies and how movies reflect our American culture at the particular time the movie was made. We'll be right back on Buckmaster. Life on Earth exists in a delicate balance. Earth is a closed system. That's why it's so important to find ways to replenish resources as we use them. At the University of Arizona Biosphere 2, we study ways to sustainably replenish and reuse every day. See sustainability in action this April for Earth Month activities at Biosphere 2. Find us online at biosphere2.org.
Hi. Wouldn't you like a voice like mine talking about your business? Saying things like, thank you for calling, or press 1 for hours and directions. Well, it can. Cox Business offers Voice Manager, allowing you to get a professional voice to record your voicemail greeting. And with my voice, you'll need to warn whoever manages your lead gen data, because your customer base is about to expand. If you don't like my voice...
There's always mine.
Thank you for calling. All our customers are important to us.
How do you like that?
I think mine might be more appropriate.
You don't know that.
I can do fancy accents.
As good as this.
Make a great impression before you answer the phone. Cox Business Internet and Voice Manager is only $84 a month for the first 6 months with a 3-year agreement. Plus, get a $150 Visa prepaid card after online redemption. Bundle and save today. Visit coxbusiness.com. Ends 5/3/15. Includes Cox Business Internet 10 and Voice Manager Essential. Excludes taxes and fees. Visit coxbusiness.com for details. Actual speeds vary. Other restrictions apply.
Sunlink Streetcar, Sun Shuttle, Twin Peaks Interchange, Valencia Road, Houghton Road, Saharita Road, McGee Road. Just a few examples of projects funded through the Regional Transportation Authority. Since voter approval of the RTA plan in 2006, the RTA and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 570 projects to make our transportation network safer and less congested. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. Learn more at rtamobility.com.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting the stories missed by the mainstream media. Our sources bring you regional, national, and international news from a different perspective. Opinion from Emil Franzi, Phil Richardson, and other top national columnists. Plus, Eric Peters with auto reviews, Bob Garver on movies, Rebecca Guthrie on books, a section on Western heritage, and sports coverage, too. It's a cross-section of information found nowhere else. SOAZNewsX.com, published Mondays and Thursdays. Subscriptions are free at SOAZNewsX.com.
Attending Pima Community College means success for you and your family at less than a quarter the cost of trade schools or four-year universities. Partnering with business leaders, Pima creates programs tailored to help you succeed in today's high-demand jobs and offers two-year associate degrees that transfer to universities nationwide. Whether your goal is a new career or transferring to a four-year college, Pima Community College can help you succeed. Call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu. This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Thursday, a newsmaker interview with Dr. H.T. Sanchez. Dr. Sanchez is superintendent of the Tucson Unified School District. Plus, we'll preview next season's UA Presents. Buckmaster, noon to 1 on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice, and anywhere in the world, live streaming podcasts and show archive. On my website, it's buckmastershow.com. That is very appropriate bump music, the theme from the Magnificent Seven, for our next interview. More than 100 years have passed since Edwin S. Porter amazed audiences with the Great Train Robbery, yet Westerns are still around in the 21st century and thriving, albeit in changed form. So writes Dr. Richard Aguila in a new book published by the University of Arizona Press. The book is titled The Sagebrush Trail, Western Movies and the 20th Century America. The book is attracting a lot of national attention. Dr. Aguila contends Westerns are always a magnifying glass for American culture. Richard Aguila is a professor of history and American studies at Penn State University and a distinguished lecturer for the Organization of American Historians. He has published four books, including Wanted Dead or Alive, The American West in Popular Culture. Professor Aguila joins us now on the Buckmaster Show live line from Pennsylvania. And if you would like to join us on the live line at 790-2040, let us know what your favorite Western is and why, and we'll get some comments from Dr. Aguila about your particular movie. Dr. Aguila, how are you?
Very good, thank you. How are you?
Doing very well, thank you very much. The title of the book, The Sagebrush Trail, does it have anything to do with a movie that was made in 1933 that had that same title?
Yes, Bill, you got it right, exactly right. That movie, it was John Wayne. It was a B-Western that not too many people know from 1933. And in that film, Wayne plays a guy who's framed for a murder back east. So Wayne's character then breaks out of jail, heads west to find the real killer, and he pretends to be a bad guy so he can infiltrate a gang of crooks. And just as Wayne's character was more than he appeared to be, the same thing is true of Western movies. That's why it makes a really good metaphor for what my book is about. These films, just like John Wayne's character in Sagebrush Trail, hold deeper meanings and secrets. And clues about America are scattered across a similar sagebrush trail that's comprised of Western movies, which winds its way throughout the 20th century and beyond. And if you look at these movies the way I have for this book, they reveal how Western movies reflect the times in terms of what's going on in American history and culture.
How did this project come about? Was it an obvious outgrowth of your earlier book, Wanted Dead or Alive?
To a large extent, it was. I got interested in it. I'm a U.S. social and cultural historian, so I deal with all sorts of different approaches to history to try to get at this notion of the American experience. And one of the things I noticed as I was dealing with Western movies for that book, Wanted Dead or Alive, is no one had really ever done a comprehensive look at these films. We're talking maybe 6,000 or 7,000 Westerns. Nobody knows for sure how many were done from the late 1890s all the way up to the present. And what I was trying to do with this book is provide that kind of a comprehensive sweep of Westerns, doing it in a chronological fashion, showing how these Westerns were connected to the times and what they tell us about life in the United States. So from that perspective, it's a history of Western movies, but it's also a history of America as well.
Let's go to the Buckmaster Show live line. I asked our listeners to phone in and ask about their favorite movie and a particular Western that may have had an influence on our listeners. Matthew is up first. Go ahead, Matthew.
Yeah, I think President Clinton has always expressed his interest in High Noon, and I was just curious to hear from you what your thoughts about High Noon and what it meant for the society and culture. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks.
Thanks. High Noon is one of those fabulous movies from the past that nowadays not a lot of people have seen that film. And what makes that movie particularly interesting, it comes out in 1952 in the midst of the Cold War culture. Joseph McCarthy and McCarthyism are sort of raging across the United States. And that film, which stars Gary Cooper, that film picks up on a lot of these Cold War fears during the time. And the movie, on one level, Cooper plays an aging sheriff who's about to get married, and these criminals are returning from jail, and they are going to basically get Gary Cooper as well as everybody else in the town and help put them in jail. And it's an interesting struggle between the town and the sheriff, Gary Cooper, to see how they are going to react to these individuals. And so on another level, you could look at that film as a very good comment about American society in the early 1950s.
The book links Western movies to the kind of the myth of the West, the mythic West. What exactly is a mythic West, and how does it differ from the real West?
Well, that's an important question, I think, because what we're really talking about, I mean, most of these Western movies throughout the 20th century and beyond are not authentic as far as depicting what's really going on in history. They're plugging into various myths that we have, and one is this mythic West. Unlike the real West, which is an actual place, the mythic West is more a West of the imagination. It can be traced back hundreds of years, if not thousands of years. And what we're talking about with this myth is it portrays the West as a land of enchantment or excitement, adventure, that's just filled with colorful characters like cowboys, Indians, gunslingers. And this mythic West is always a land of opportunity where ordinary people can accomplish extraordinary things. It's a land of freedom, equality, hope, redemption, all the things we associate with the United States, basically. And in effect, what I'm getting at here is this mythic West is one of America's greatest origin myths. It's predicated on the notion of American exceptionalism. It epitomizes, in another sense, the American dream. And it shows that it's being played out in a uniquely American environment. So from that perspective, the myth changes, like myths change all the time. It changes within America from one generation to another. But what's going to be very important is it plugs into these dreams and hopes and fears of Americans throughout history.
If I had to, reflecting back on my childhood, I would say, and the Magnificent Seven, we heard that music coming into this segment, wonderful score to that movie. I would say that influenced me growing up more than any other Western. What was special about the Magnificent Seven, Dr. Aguila?
Well, I think what it does, it plugs into, again, a time period in American history where outlaws, outsiders are in. There are all sorts of struggles going on, struggles with foreign governments and whether or not you should trust the government. And I mean, there are all sorts of things coming into play. But even though these outlaws basically represent supposedly the other side of the law, what we're talking about is they're upholding these traditional values, you know, working for the underdog and fighting for truth and justice and all those kinds of things. So it's a great movie on all sorts of levels.
We had an email question come in for you about the movie with Marlon Brando, Appaloosa. What do you think of that movie?
That one I've never seen in terms of that particular film. And I must have watched, for this book, I probably watched 1,200 films. That one I did not yet. What I tried to do is I was getting all of the major films from the time period and then a lot of obscure stuff, too. And that one fell through the cracks.
Well, Marlon Brando didn't do many Westerns. That's maybe what that might make that movie kind of special.
Well, that could be too.
790-2040, 790-2040. We're speaking with Dr. Richard Aguila, and he is the author of the University of Arizona Press book called The Sagebrush Trail, Western Movies and 20th Century America. If you'd like to call in at 790-2040, give us your favorite movie. What is your favorite Western, Dr. Aguila?
For me, I think I'd pick The Searchers, John Wayne, from 1956. Great storyline, and it's set against magnificent scenery that plugs into these notions of the West, everything from Monument Valley to the Rocky Mountains. The characters are powerful, and then it also plugs into all of these kinds of themes that we're talking about, everything from the Cold War, images of women, changing roles of gender, race, all sorts of things are going on in that film. And if your listeners haven't seen that one, that's the one I would recommend more than anything else, The Searchers.
The Searchers is usually considered a five-star movie. It is really a iconic Western, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it's directed by John Ford.
The movie Stagecoach, a lot of people point to that, and that was one of the big early Westerns. Was that a kind of a seminal moment in Western movie making?
Yeah, I think it is. Interesting story about that, too. John Wayne had originally started his first starring role was in a movie called The Big Trail back in 1930. Mm-hmm. It was a really big budget production, and the movie just bombed. It comes out in 1930. The Great Depression has just hit. And what they had tried to do with this film is they wanted to make it this broad screen epic, basically, of wagon trains heading west. And in order to show the movie, you actually had to buy new equipment. And because the Depression hits, most theaters in the United States couldn't do that. And to make a long story short, the movie just bombs. It almost ends John Wayne's career before it began.
Wow.
And for the rest of the 1930s, John Wayne is doing a series of B-Westerns, including the one you mentioned at the beginning, Bill, The Sagebrush Trail, that the book is named after. Mm-hmm. And then in 1939, John Ford taps John Wayne to star in Stagecoach. And it's like a second coming for John Wayne. But in one of my favorite scenes in that film, if you saw this, you know the scene I'm going to be talking about here. It's when the stagecoach pulls up around the bend, and all of a sudden, there's John Wayne in all his iconic glory. Mm-hmm. He's standing there with a saddle in one hand, twirling his Winchester rifle, and the stagecoach
comes
to
scene.
A halt.
Yeah.
You remember that scene?
Yeah, I do remember it.
And John Ford made wonderful use of backlighting that gives John Wayne almost an angelic image in that movie. In fact, I use that image in the book because it just captures all sorts of things that are going on there. So from that perspective, it's an excellent movie as far as what's going on.
It really plugs
into all sorts of Depression themes as well.
Let's see if we can squeeze Mike in. He's been waiting patiently with his favorite movie. Then we need to take a break, and we'll be back with Richard Aguila. Go ahead, Mike.
I got two favorites. Clint Eastwood's Unforgiven. I loved the miniseries Lonesome Dove on TV.
Lonesome Dove and Unforgiven, Dr. Aguila.
Which Unforgiven? The Clint Eastwood one?
Clint Eastwood.
Okay. Both of those were excellent examples of filmmaking dealing with the West. And now Lonesome Dove, obviously, it starts out as a television show, a miniseries on TV. Unforgiven, in fact, it's fascinating with Unforgiven because that comes out in the 1990s. And almost 100 years after the Great Train Robbery begins the 20th century in 1903, Unforgiven ends the 20th century in effect for Westerns then. And Unforgiven picks up on all sorts of revisionist themes, and the Clint Eastwood character in that particular film, as you recall from watching that movie, is a very troubled old gunslinger, and he's trying to do the right thing, but he just keeps getting pulled back into some of the old patterns of violence and drinking and all sorts of other things. And it's a very ambiguous movie in that sense that I think taps the mood of the American public by the late 20th century, that no one was sure about the direction of the country in some ways, or they were unsure about what was going to happen in the next century. So it's a great movie. Absolutely good choices on both those things.
Dr. Richard Aguilar will stick with us for our final segment, but this portion of the news and the news talk on Buckmaster brought to you by Gila Wilderness over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Escape from the ordinary. Walk through the Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument. Swim in the Gila River. Relax in the hot springs. And hike in the Gila National Forest. Historic Silver City. Only 3 hours from Tucson over to a great area of the United States, southwest New Mexico. You can find out more about the great places to stay like Bear Mountain Lodge and Little Toad Creek Inn by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. We'll be right back talking about the Westerns.
Honey, welcome home. How was your trip to L.A.?
Flying out of Tucson was the way to go. I got 3 whole days of FaceTime with the board, and they liked the fact that I saved the company time and money by flying out of TIA.
Oh, honey, that's great. Sounds like your career is really taking off.
You bet. With so many daily flights to L.A., I can get there in no time at all.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Attending Pima Community College means success for you and your family at less than a quarter the cost of trade schools or four-year universities. Partnering with business leaders, Pima creates programs tailored to help you succeed in today's high-demand jobs and offers two-year associate degrees that transfer to universities nationwide. Whether your goal is a new career or transferring to a four-year college, Pima Community College can help you succeed. Call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu.
Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary works to end the senseless abuse of horses and burros so these noble creatures can live free of pain and suffering. Its ranch in Amado is home to dozens of rescued equines who receive special care as they await new, loving homes. Won't you help? Visit equinevoices.org. Equine Voices, a voice for all equines who cannot speak for themselves.
Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Are you a landlord by choice or by force? Experiencing a job transfer and don't know what to do with your current house? Want to move but can't sell your current house? Hello, my name is Ken Adams, co-owner of Rincon Ventures Property Management. Rincon Ventures has a fully automated accounting process, electronic payments, and 24-hour access to your accounts. With some of the lowest rates in Tucson, Rincon Ventures has grown rapidly in this down economy. Let us show you why. Give us a call at 881-2258 right now and experience the difference. Rincon Ventures, where service is a fact, not another empty promise. 881-2258.
Soundtrack from The Big Country, as we're talking about Western movies with Dr. Richard Aguila, professor of history and American studies at Penn State University. He's on the live line, and he's the author of an outstanding book published by the University of Arizona Press titled The Sagebrush Trail, Western Movies in the 20th Century America. Let's go back to the live line at 790-2040. Our friend Jim Kelly is going to tell us about his favorite Western. Jim?
Hi, Dr. Aguilar. What I love about Westerns is all the elements of literature that get thrown into one movie. Man against man, man against God, man against nature, man against himself. I mean, all of these wonderful conflicts that are made up of the classics of literature that get thrown into this modern American Western. One of my favorite movies, I don't know if you ever saw it, Burt Reynolds in The Man Who Loved Cat Dancing. And one of the reasons I like it is because it stretched Burt Reynolds as an actor, but it also had all of those elements that made John Wayne who John Wayne was.
Okay, Dr. Aguila?
Yeah, I would agree 100% with that. I mean, that's one of the things I think that is so fascinating about Westerns for many people, that they plug in to so many different approaches, they hit on so many different levels. And all of the things that you mentioned from literature are there. In fact, I remember reading something once where somebody was making the comparison in literature to the old knight and the American cowboy, and that they basically stem from the same types of myth. I think that's true to an extent, and although there are tremendous differences, too, I think, between cowboys and knights. But the point is that Westerns appeal on so many different levels to people, not just the things that you're mentioning, but colorful characters, just the props, the cowboy hats, the guns, the horses, spurs, the scenery. I mean, all of these things are there. And ultimately, though, in the end, regardless of whether you're looking at it from the way I was, as far as movies as history, or if you're looking at it from other values as well in terms of literary approaches, the main reason why these things are extremely successful is because they're great entertainment. That for whatever people are looking for in terms of entertainment, they're going to find those kinds of things in movies, whether you're talking early silent Westerns or movies in the new century. But yeah, that was a good movie. I agree with you.
We should, of course, mention that Tucson, where we are broadcasting from, was the epicenter of Western movies for so long. 1939, Arizona, the movie Arizona, started really old Tucson, the movie making there, great movie making through the 40s, 50s, 60s, and even into the 70s. We were a real epicenter for Western movie making. Unfortunately, the Westerns have kind of passed us by and gone other places. Hopefully, it will come back to Tucson. But great Westerns have been made here, sir.
Oh, yes. In fact, one of the best that I've, and I didn't see this one until I first started on this book. It was the first talking Western in old Arizona, the title. It starred Warner Baxter as the Cisco Kid, and it is a phenomenal Western as the first talkie, but it also helps puts forth this thing about the Cisco Kid. And what's interesting about it is how much it ties into what was going on in the so-called Roaring Twenties and what you have in that particular film. So that's another one I strongly recommend, particularly for your listeners, since it deals with Arizona.
And I think D.W. Griffith made some silent movies here in Tucson way back at the early in the turn of the century.
Yeah, and Bill, most people don't know that D.W. Griffith started out making Western movies, and then he went on, obviously, to Birth of a Nation and other major films. But he was one of the early purveyors in terms of Western movies. Thomas Ince was another one right around the same time, who really get going in terms of developing techniques and style and the importance of a director in Western film.
I've only got about a minute left, but I do want to point out there was an outstanding piece about you and the book at Salon.com. They excerpt a chapter, and you talked about Django Unchained, and you call that a fascinating Western hybrid. Is that sort of a watershed for what modern Westerns are going to be all about?
I'm not sure that it is in one sense. And one of the things that's very interesting, what begins to develop starting in the 1960s, the late 1960s and beyond, are revisionist films. And one of the things I found as I was going through all of these movies is from the 1960s onward, you have traditional Westerns, but you also have Westerns that tend to revise the myth one way or another, or reject the myth sometimes to make a point about American society and culture. And clearly, Django Unchained falls into that category, that it shows those revisionist Westerns are still very much around. They didn't die off. But at the same time, you still have Westerns now that are very traditional in their approaches. And what that seems to suggest is, as you move into the future, they're not necessarily going to be in one category like Django Unchained, mm-hmm. but they'll continue to develop this dichotomy of Western films, both revisionist and traditional Westerns.
Dr. Richard,
those are both around, say.
Dr. Richard Aguila, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure. It was enjoyable.
Dr. Richard Aguila, professor of history and American studies at Penn State, the author of The Sagebrush Trail, Western Movies and 20th Century America, published by the University of Arizona Press. If you're looking for an outstanding auto mechanic, we suggest Mike Emery and his team at Perfection Auto Works. Mike is offering a free 26-point inspection for your foreign or domestic automobile, 323-8650 or perfectionautoworks.com. Midtown location, one block south of Speedway at 1046 North Beverly. Coming up this afternoon, For Tucson at 4 with Mike Shaw, produced by Ray Allen. Then tomorrow morning, Wake Up Tucson, Chris and Joe, and then the Daily Double 8 to 9 with Christy Simone and a guest host. I'm Bill Buckmaster, along with Ed Alexander. Ed and I will be back at 12:04 tomorrow afternoon. Have a great afternoon and evening.
Intelligent Talk 24/7, AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. On the web at kvoi.com.